The topic of my talk, I'd like to focus with you on the role that experts' opinion, experts' advice, experts' testimony have in the legal practice, and in particular in legal interpretation. Well, everybody knows here that technical expertise play a very important role, both in legislation. So it affects every stages actually of the legislative process, and also all kind of adjudication in a way. But what strikes me is the fact that in the international debate on the matter, everybody think that the role of expert is relevant as to the process of fact finding, whereas there is no connection between expert advices and legal interpretation at all. There are different things, perhaps no connection. So my thesis today is quite the opposite one. I would claim that expert opinions, testimony, expert advices can give rise to a very relevant problem of interpretation. We will look at that. I try to explain what kind of problem it is and in what sense it is a problem of interpretations. But before going into the subject more close, I try to very quickly to go through the general opinion about problem of interpretations. So a problem of interpretation is that problem, that situation which interpretation is needed. What are the situations in which this is the case? So Ralph wrote a long paper on the subject, which I think it will be published during 2011 on indeterminacy and law. So this is the reason why I go very very quickly on that. So the general idea is this: legal interpretation is considered as a means to reduce the indeterminacy of law, either for cognitive legal theory, for instance, or decisional purposes. So when lawyers speak, or legal theorists speak about problems of interpretation, they have in mind the problem of indeterminacy. Because of the fact the law is indeterminate, you have to interpret it. So the different problems of interpretation are well known by legal theorists. There is a lot of stuff on that. So in particular, we face four forms of indeterminacy in law: ambiguity, generality, vagueness, defeasibility. Ambiguity, very, very shortly. Ambiguity is lack of univocal content. You face it when you have to use a legal sentence which has multiple contents, multiple meanings. Interpretation is of help lawyers in this case by leading them to choose the content among the various ones that had to use to settle the case. So generality is lack of specific content. You face it when a legal sentence is so general that you are not sure that such a provision can be applied to all the sub-cases which belong to such an extension. Vagueness, what is that? Vagueness is a big subject. Vagueness is deficiency. We could define vagueness as deficiency of content. We face vagueness when the application condition of a terms of an expression admit borderline cases. So cases in which we have some doubt about the opportunity to apply the concept or not. Finally, we have defeasibility. Actually, defeasibility does not affect legal sentences nor legal norms, so the content of sentences, but the condition under which a norm has to be applied to the case. When a norm admits implicit exception to the application because of the consequence of the norm, if the consequences are unacceptable, unjust, unfair, and so on, so the norm cannot be applied. This is the case of divisibility. So, in general, these are the main problem of interpretation, or considered the main problem of interpretation. One thing which is worth being considered is that such a description or such a taxonomy does not depend on the theory of interpretation that you uphold. Every theory of interpretation that we have on the market today still claim that a problem of interpretation is a problem of indeterminacy. Okay? Well, the point I'd like to make today is that we face a problem of interpretation which is not a problem of indeterminacy. And I will call such a problem opacity of law. So my thesis is that legal scholars, so legal theory, we are studying law here in this university. So legal scholar, practitioner, judges, lawyer, and so on, often face a problem of interpretation, which is not a problem of indeterminism. How can we define opacity in law? A legal norm is opaque when a legal decision maker, it's very broad term, so legal decision maker is the legislator actually, or the judge, or the administrative agency, and so on, do not understand. Does not understand the content, and despite this, she or he uses such a content as framed by expert opinions to rule the case. Okay, sorry, I have used the term legislator here is wrong. I come back to legislators later. Okay, we are now defining the problem of interpretation and problem of adjudication first, and then we go into the subject later. Okay, I repeat, a norm is opaque when the judge, for instance, does not understand the content, but despite this fact, uses the norm to rule the case. So to explain such a strange situation, it seems very strange and unusual. Think about that. How can be the case that one is using a norm that is not understood by him to do something? What can be the case? So to get into the subject, I propose to you a thought experiment. What is a thought experiment? A philosopher do thought experiment. So a thought experiment is a picture in which you imagine an unreal situation in order to highlight some aspects of reality normally you don't look at. Okay, this is an experiment in such a sense. You isolate a portion of reality to go deeper into it. So this is my experiment. I propose it to you, and I ask you to try to think of it. So imagine such a situation. Okay? I call such an argument the expert room argument. I read through the text here because it's important to do it. So imagine a technical language that you do not understand. For instance, the language of chemistry. The example is chemistry because I don't know anything at all about chemistry. So to me, chemical formula are something like meaning like squiggles. So some sign on the board, so means nothing at all. Okay. Moreover, imagine to be a judge who who is asked to decide a case concerning a commercial product. We might call this product Slock. Please don't ask me why Slock. Slock, that's all. In our story, you don't know anything about Slock. If you look at it, you see a green, sticky, and stinky stuff, but you have no idea about what it is made of or what purpose it serves. Nothing at all. Now, suppose you are closed in the justice room to get the decision and that you are given a law book to this purpose. Some of the sentences in the law book contain chemical formulas. These formulas can be identified only by means of their shapes and do not require you to understand any of them. So, you, chemical formula that had no meaning at all for you. Typically, these legal sentences prescribe such things as if something is made of X, Y, Z, then it's prohibited. And if something is made of A, B, C, then it is permitted. So, this is for chemical formulas or whatever. Okay? Imagine that some reliable experts outside the justice room hand a piece of paper claiming that slug is made of X, Y, Z. On the basis of this claim, you give back a different piece of paper, we can call it sentence, stating that since XYZ is prohibited and slug is made of XYZ, then slug is prohibited. Some question about such a strange situation. First one, do you have decided the case according to the law? Which is your first reaction? I'm very interested in that, really. This is a thought experiment. Did you decide the case according to the law? On the one side, it seems that the right answer is yes. Why not? Look at the sand and the sentence here. If something is made of X, Y, Z, then it is prohibited. There is an expert outside the courtroom who tells me this is slug, it's made of XYZ. Then, since slug is made of XYZ, then slug is prohibited. In logic, we say this is modus ponens, so this is correct from a logical point of view. So it seems to be the right conclusion, but is there something strange or not? What is the point here? There is something very strange here, because the judge, you, in this situation, you don't know what does XYZ mean. You have no idea about that. Can be the case that you decide this lawsuit without knowing the content of the norm that you are applying. The first question. Second question, do you have interpreted the legal provision to reach the decision? Yes or no? Take the definition of interpretation that we have used at the outset of the talk. Is the content of such a legal provision undeterminate? Is it or not? It's not to be so, because on the one side, so experts give you the right answer. Now, this is, slug is made of XYZ. But are you able to say that such a content is really determinate? You can say nothing about that because you do not get the content. You cannot grasp it. So, how can be the case that you are interpreting the text? My thesis is, my description of the situation is that the case has been decided although the content, the sense, the Freudian terms, the sense, the meaning, the condition of application of the terms you are using is known to you. You can decide a case without knowing the content of the norm you are applying. Moreover, consider that at the end of the situation, you have the side cash without knowing anything about X, Y, Z, about A, B, C. You don't know anything about slog too, either. Sorry. So nothing at all. But the case seem decided in the right way. As a matter of fact, the facts of the matter have been legally qualified by fixing the reference of the connection between terms and reality of the chemical expression in the legal provision as if they were proper names or rigid designator. A rigid designator is a term which refers to something in reality independent of your description of reality. Okay? Independent of the content. The context of language use, and so on. But my thesis is that you cannot interpret a legal sentence if you don't understand it, if you don't get the content of it. Okay. Moreover, my claim is that in that situation, you cannot interpret the law. So the text is unacceptable. For you, you cannot get it. There is something that blocks your access to the text. Okay. And this is so because of the expert opinion that you use in order to get a decision. Okay. Expert opinion, on the one hand, seems that expert help you in finding the right solution. On the other hand, expert opinion block your access to the content. It drive you to get a decision, although you haven't no idea about what you have decided. Oh, okay, the standard reaction to that could be, okay, this is very imaginative, is strange situation that you have, okay, pick up somewhere in your mind, but it has no connection to reality at all. There's no situation in which a real judge deals with such a legal legal term, XYZ, it deals with, I don't know, such a kind of legal expression, and we don't face such a situation which we have to do with slog or silly thing like that. So my thesis is that this is not true. Okay, this is a thought experiment. It highlights something very specific in reality that we don't normally are aware of. But there are some examples that we can give where the situation is very close to that. I try to give some example of that. Okay, the first one is a case is an opinion of the European Court of Justice, Upjohn Limited versus the Licensing Authority, about the interpretation of a legal provision. Of Article 11 of the Directive 65 of 1965. According to this, under this prescription, the authorization to place a medical product on the market can be revoked when that product proves to be harmful. And then there are other two conditions under which an authority can revoke the authorization, marketing authorization of a medical product. So the case was this, that in 1993, the UK Medicine Control Agency decided to revoke the marketing authorization of Frisoline on the basis of an expert advice. What happened? Do you know the case? Have you ever did you ever meet the case? So the situation was this. The UK Medicine Control Agency heard that in the US, a woman killed her mother while under the effect of Trisolan, which is a medical product for sleeping. So, okay, because of the idea of this news coming from the US, the UK Medicine Control Agency decided to call for an expert opinion of the matter, and the agency called upon to answer the question claimed that Frisolam is the there is a causal connection between Frisolam and that fact. Frisolam is dangerous. Okay, and they decided at the end to stop, to revoke the authorization. Okay, this is important information, and this despite the fact that the European community, through two different expert opinions, stated that the Frisolam was not dangerous at all. The advantages of the product outweighed the possible damages. Okay, but still, UK Medicine Control Agency claimed no, cannot be said. Okay, the case was brought to the High Court of UK, which decided to ask to the European Court of Justice advice in order the way in which such a legal provision have to be interpreted. So, and the court gave a long opinion on the matter, claiming that the community judicature may not substitute its assessment of the fact for the assessment made by the authority concerned. So, it's not possible that a judge substitute its assessment, evaluation of the fact, with the assessment made by an administrative authorities of a member state. Okay, this is a very important decision in European administrative law, but what is relevant as to our purposes today is to look at the reason underlying such a decision. So, according to the court, the condition of application of the term harmful are or depends on a matter of fact. To determine if something is harmful is a matter of fact. Has nothing to do with legal interpretation. Okay. And when this is the case, okay, a community judicator, so the European Court of Justice, cannot substitute an assessment of the case with another one. Okay. This is the claim. But my impression, my thesis, is that our story about the Slovak and the strange situation which a norm that we do not understand has to be applied in order to get the decision in the Slovak situation says something interesting about such a situation. According to my thesis, the case is not simply about a matter of fact, but it's about a matter of interpretation. It is a matter of interpretation, actually. Why? Because the expert advice firstly determine, give information about the condition of application of the term harmful, determine under what condition a medical product is harmful. Okay. And then a short time if such a product is harmful. Okay. The judge uses such a term to qualify the facts on the basis of the information that the expert's advice gives to the judge. So it seems to me, to put it another way, it seems to me that the expert advice apparently is about fact, but actually is used to fix the content of a legal concept. And then, in order to qualify facts on the basis of such a content. Okay. And you cannot do that. You cannot do a legal qualification without having a legal content. okay, before. This is my thesis. So, if that is true, I'm not sure of that. We are we are discussing about that. And if that's true, obviously, the reason underlying such a decision are wrong, because this is not simply a matter of fact. The question here, but it's a matter of interpretation. My conclusion is the condition under which a drug is harmful depends on the content of the term harmful in the context of adjudication. In Upjohn, the term harmful turned opaque to the judge. Its reference was fixed on the basis of an expert advice without interpreting the legal provision. Was content was not mastered by the court, but was given by the expert. Then we can come back here if is it clear or not? It's okay. Another case: Tycap versus Peabody Coal Company. This is a U.S. case decided by the Court of Appeals, Seventh Circuit, in 2007. And the decision is about the interpretation of a very important act in the US law, the Black Lunch Benefit Act of 1972, and then following amendments and so on. According to paragraph 921, in the case of total disability of a minor, due to pneumoconiosis. Pneumoconiosis is a disease due to the exposure of lunch to coal dust. Okay. According to the law, if you worked in a coal mine for at least 15 years, you get it. So the law tells that if you get the illness, it is pneumoconiosis. So this is a presupposition in the law. It's very interesting, the structure of the act, actually. Okay. Mr. Steinkamp worked in a mine for 30 years and got ill. He applied for state benefit on the basis of paragraph 921. An administrative law judge awarded Mr. Steinkamp benefits at the very beginning, but then, on appeal, the benefit review board remanded the decision. Okay. The second judge, administrative judge, deciding on the case, called upon five experts in order to determine if the guy, Mr. Steinkamp, actually got such an illness and not something different. He is ill, clearly ill, but we do not know if he got really a pneumoconiosis or something else. Okay? The fact is that among this panel of experts, three of the experts claimed that he didn't get such a disease, and two claimed, yes, he got it. On the basis of this counting, the judges decided, yes, the guy cannot get the benefit. By counting the no's, so to say, the decision was getting. Okay? Mr. Steinkamp decided to bring the sentence to the appeal court, Seventh Circuit, and the judges remanded the decision. They did not accept it. Why? Here it's very interesting to go through the sentence, to go through the text. One very important point is this: the judge must provide a medical reason for preferring one physician conclusion over another's. It's not enough to count noses. Okay. Three against two, so three win. It's not that the judge has to do. The judge has to go into the subject and give medical reasons in order to get a decision. If the judge doesn't do something like that, the legal decision is not correct. Okay, this is the thesis that the Richard Portner was on the panel, the judicial panel here also. And why is it relevant as to our purposes such a decision? So if you go through the sentence, you can see that there is no real justification of such a claim. The judges simply collected different decision precedents in American law, and then they try to defend civil rights and the spirit of the American Constitution. Okay, but I think that our story about the SLOC, about opacity in law and so on, can give a reason for justifying such a decision. Why? The term primo cognosis occurring in the legal provision was opaque to the judge, as a matter of fact. The judge was not able to, he didn't understand the content. He didn't have the condition of application of the term. He had no idea about that. He didn't know what is actually meant and relied on experts, both, this is the point, both to settle the application condition, so to fix the meaning of the term, and to ascertain whether Mr. Stolkart's disease met that. It's really to qualify the fact. It uses the advice of the expert both to determine the content of the legal provision, Tatbestandmerkmale, something like that, and on the other side, to determine if such conditions are satisfied, are met. Okay. These two examples are supposed to show that my story about the slug is not something so quatch. Okay? It's not that. This is an example that can be used to look at an aspect of adjudication which is not considered normally in legal theory. Three objections against my thesis. I discussed them very quickly. So, the first one, the opacity of law is an issue concerning fact-finding. It's about fact. And what I am saying about legal interpretation actually has not to be referred to such problem in legal theory and legal practice, but on the process of fact-finding. So, what is the problem in the first case we examined? The problem was to determine if such a product, such a drug, is harmful. And this is a matter of fact. What was the problem in the second adjudication? Oh, the problem was, do Mr. Stolkart have Does Mr. Stolkart have such a disease? And this is a matter of fact. It's not a matter of interpretation. But my thesis refers to the way in which expert opinion was used by the judge during adjudication. And the expert testimony was used during both trials to establish both the truth of the fact statements. So that's true. But previously, the content of the related legal sentences, the sentences that they use it to qualify the facts, and to say, okay, that's your application is justified or not as to the benefits. Okay. Second objection, legal provision have been interpreted according to their wording. There is interpretation. Of course, this is a literal interpretation. The literal meaning, the plain meaning, the apparent meaning is given by experts. And the judge simply apply the literal meaning, use the literal meaning of the sentence to settle the case. But it seems to me that this is not the case. Why? Because the meaning of a linguistic expression cannot be considered plain, literal, apparent, whatever you like, so different qualification that you can find in a legal decision, if who uses this expression, the term, does not understand it. Can we have plain meaning if we do not understand a word? it's contradictory to me. Okay, it's not the case. It's not the case. Third objection, very quickly. Opacity tantamount to epistemic blackness. Opacity is not an autonomous problem. It belongs to a big family of problems that we call epistemic blackness, vagueness. That seems to me wrong, too. Why? And an opaque expression is usually determinant. There is no borderline cases. Experts, they don't like borderline cases, although then we can find a situation which expert opinion crashes. Okay, expert opinion are not homogeneous in a way. Moreover, the content of an opaque norm does not depend on the interpreter but on expert. So it's not something related to our cognition, but the problem is that I don't care about the content. I don't care. Please help me, expert, and give me the content. And then I can, on the basis of that, I can decide the case. It might be the case that you have much more objection than this, but I hope we have time to talk about that. On the basis of that, we can clarify in what sense opacity of law is a problem of interpretation. Why opacity, if such a thing exists actually, okay, is a problem of interpretation? We know, I hope that's clear at this point, that when opacity, of course, when we face such a problem, we do not face a problem of interpretation because the law is undetermined. In the case of opacity, the law is determined. I would say it's too much determined, so determined that the judge cannot grasp it. Okay. The opacity of law gives rise to problems of interpretation because the legal provision cannot be interpreted in the case of in which it must be. This is a problem of interpretation because you cannot interpret the law. You cannot. The interpretive process is blocked. Why is it so? In what sense is it blocked? There's something in between. You cannot get the content. You cannot go into the content. What does it mean? You cannot use the content, actually, or not as an instrument, but as a way, as a means of communication. Why? In the case of opacity, the interpreter is not able, cannot do a lot of things. A lot of things that interpreters normally do when interpreting the law. For instance, you cannot check out ambiguous legal provision. You cannot get an ambiguity because you have no access to the content. So you cannot check if the term, the content that an expert gives to you is actually ambiguous. Admit multiple interpretation. Moreover, you cannot apply standard canons of interpretation. You cannot interpret the law according to the purpose. You cannot interpret the law according to the legal system because you are not interpreting at all. And you cannot do that. You cannot use doctrinal concept distinction to articulate legal contents. You cannot use the opinion of doctrine to build up content, to construct statute. You cannot do that. Moreover, you cannot set up implicit exception to norm application based upon the assessment of consequences. So you cannot defeat the norm. Why not? Because you cannot foresee the consequence of norm application. Being the norm inaccessible to you, you cannot foresee the consequences. What's happened by applying the norm? I have no idea, because I have no idea about the content. You cannot single out conflicts among legal norms, antinomies. So, being the norm without any content for you, the norm cannot be in conflict with other norms belonging to the legal system. You cannot identify and reduce vagueness. It might be the case that the expert opinion pick up cases that are vague, that are borderline, but you cannot check it. Moreover, you cannot appeal to legal principles against technical legal contents because you use technical content in order not to use principle. Opacity is used, is generated by the legislator in order to limit interpretive activities of judges. So this is why at the very beginning I made a connection with the legislator, opacity in the legislator. Okay. Is it clear or not? The thesis, at least. I hope it is. Okay. Very quick. Do you have sometimes 5 minutes? Okay, it's okay? It's very late, I know, but okay. Very quickly. I try to figure out which are the main kinds of opacity of law. This is really a broad picture. In my research, I try to develop an idea, an intuition. And when you use intuition to do research, it's really a mess because you have a starting point, but you have no idea about the conclusion of your path. Okay, and so I started with such an intuition, but then the things get very complicated. And so I'm trying to distinguish very situation which opacity comes into account or have to be considered and so on. So this is a first, a very tentative approach to different kinds of opacity law. I propose two different distinctions. So the first one is related to the sources of opacity. Which are the sources of opacity? Why we face opacity? Depends on what? As to such, from this point of view, we can distinguish legislative opacity from judicial opacity. What is legislative opacity? Sometimes the legislature uses legal expressions as rigid designator in order to narrow interpretive discretion. Sometimes the legislator decided to use technical terms or to define, redefine natural language terms in a technical way in order to get a term opaque to the judge. What does it mean? If I use a technical term in legislation, the judge is supposed to use the technical content of that term in order to get a decision. So opacity could be thought of as a strategy in legislation, a strategy of narrowing interpretive discretion. Okay? You can do that in two ways, by using technical terms, so the content is not determined by the judge, but is determined by a technical authority, as is better that it is so, according to the legislator, because of there are several reasons of that. So this is a matter of distribution of powers and so on. But there is another situation, another source of opacity. Okay, I call it judicial opacity. The judge of court might decide not to engage in interpretation and might decide to use expert advice to ascribe a content to legal provision. So I use technical advice in order not to interpret the law. And this is my disposition as judge. It's better that I do not engage into such a thing because this is very, for several reasons. So we are not thinking about freedom, political, social reason justifying such an attitude. But this is simply a conceptual possibility. So it can be the case that happens. Okay. In the paper, I give some example of that, but we have no time. If you like, we can discuss it later. So, as to the content, how can we distinguish opaque norms? So, opaque norm can differ as to the content. Here we can distinguish definitional opacity. In this case, the sense of the opaque expression results from a definition which is not known by the interpreter. So, it can be the case that the technical term is defined by an agency, for instance, or an authority which is not a legal one, and then, according to such a definition, the term turns opaque. But this is very easy. This is a very, very simple situation because opacity can be removed by making explicit the definition and by getting the content of the definition. The most cases of opacity are cases of ontological opacity. What is it? In this case, the sense of the opaque expression depends on the property of object, events, pneumoconiosis, events, Mr. X as illness, Y, state of affairs, connection between facts, and so on. This expression refers to, but these properties are not known by who uses the opaque term. The judge has no idea about pneumoconiosis. What is that? I have no idea about that. What does the term mean? Look at it. What kind of question is this? It is the same as to ask under what condition it's correct that I use such a term to fix reference, to pick up something in the world and to call it using such a term. If I have no idea about the properties and I use expert opinion on it together, opacity arises. Okay. There is a third kind opaque norm, because it's even more complicated than this, and I call them. I don't go into that. I prefer to very quickly to have a look of the so-called axiological opacity, opacity about values or moral. Was it that? Definition could be the following. A legal expression can be axiologically opaque if its sense depends on moral reasoning and deliberation. It might be the case that the content of a term, a legal term, a legal expression, depends on moral deliberation. When does it happen? It is true that when a moral term is used within legal context, pragmatically, so for instance by the judge, such a term turns to a legal term. It's not a moral term anymore, it's a legal one. But we face some situations, problematic situation, in which moral expertise are used to determine the content of legal provision. This is the case in biolaw, for instance, where there is the idea that there is moral expertise, and this moral expertise can be used to determine what terms such as, I don't know, well-being means. Okay. In this case, when we use a moral expertise to determine the content of a term, we face axiological opacity. This is a very, very difficult problem. This is very difficult to deal with. Why? In the case of axiological opacity, an expression is not only radically opaque, so this is not only inaccessible, but also its content is disputed because moral content are disputed. Okay? Radical opacity. Moreover, the real point here is a further one. The fact is that moral contents are not simply controversial, but it's also disputed whether these contents are apt to be known. If you really can get moral content. In the philosophical discussion, there is a very huge, large debate on such a matter. If you think that moral content cannot be known, you cannot get it, you cannot determine and get the content of the term well-being, for instance, because such a content depends on individual disposition that cannot be checked up, okay? Then you face a second order opacity. The term is opaque not only for people using it, but also for the expert, which have no idea about the content and think that the term has no content at all. This is a more radical situation of opacity, because the content is inaccessible for the experts too. In moral discussion, we could face such a situation. If the content of moral expressions cannot be known, assumes that, then opacity turns to undecidability. It is not possible to make the sense of such expression perspicuous. So the decision of the judge, application of the norm, is like a dice throw, without any reason, without any reason. So to avoid undecidability, one has to enter into the moral debate, discuss the statute of moral reasoning, its implication for legal interpretation. If one assumes that a moral expertise exists, it can be used to determine the content of moral terms, even when they are used by legal authorities. The strange case of bioethics committee and so on are an example of this, seems to me. Some conclusion, very quickly. Two claims. First one. Opaque legal terms block, in a way, the normal adjudication process and make it impossible to check out legal indeterminacy and to fulfill interpretation. When a term is opaque, or norm is opaque, you cannot interpret legal sentence. This is my main thesis in this paper. Moreover, to overcome opacity, the interpreter should translate scientific technical reasons into legal reasons, being aware of the differences between the two domains of reasoning. There are two very domains of reasoning. And in order to justify the conclusion, it's not enough to use technical content as a device to get a decision. You have to go into the content and to discuss it according to the law. The legal reason, or the rules of legal reason. I think that's all. Thank you so much for your attention. Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you very much for your talk, which kind of threw had a different perspective on many problems we discuss also in doctrinal law, and which we discuss under different topics. And the category of opacity kind of rearranges some of these discussions. And you already asked for questions that people might have on this approach, and so we'll just open the floor and see if there are some questions in the room.
It really is very important for me to get your reaction, because this is a work in progress. It is really so. It's not. It is an idea to be developed.
On your second conclusion, I take it that by interpreter you mean the decision maker.
Sorry.
By interpreter, in your second conclusion, do you mean the decision maker? You mentioned at the beginning.
Here, I mean the decision maker in a wide sense, so for instance the judge, okay, but also, so here is one thing to be specified. So who could use opaque norm in order to get the legal conclusion? Judges, simply judges. At the moment, I think yes, simply judges. Although, as I tried to show in the minutes ago, opacity is connected to activity of the legislator. So this is a connection to the legislator too. You can use opacity to drive the activity of the interpreter. But I think that the interpreter is the judge.
So my question would be, if you say that the judge has no clear idea about the signification of a given term in a legal provision, that is because he's no scientist. How then can he translate scientific technical reasoning into legal reasoning?
Yeah, this is the problem. But the point that I want to make here that is the following. If you don't do that, and the content of the norm is still opaque, the conclusion you get cannot be justified, actually, according to the law. So, obviously, it has to determine how you can translate scientific reasons into legal reason. From a pragmatic point of view, you do that, actually, when you use the content to get the decision, the content given by the expert to get the decision. But my concerns are about the consequences of that, on the one hand, and the justification conditions of that. So when a judge uses an opaque norm to get the decision, he is translating technical terms or technical contents into legal contents without being aware of the content. This is the problem. Okay. But I have no answer to that. I don't know how to what extent such a translation is possible. But at the first sight, I tried to pick at the problem.
Well, one answer would be to have expert judges, as you do in, say, intellectual property.
Yeah, that's the right answer, but there are some drawbacks to that too, because it's difficult to determine what kind of judge you need in order to deal with a certain case. Specialization is a way to do that, but in such a way, legal contents split up in different domains without losing the unity of the legal discourse. And this is also a drawback. But from a theoretical point of view, that could be a solution. I'm thinking of the consequences. So this is a normative part of my talk. The normative aspect of my reflection here that I have not yet considered, actually. But that's correct.
Well, I have a question in regard to the axiological opacity, because I'm very interested in these questions of ethic and the relationship to law. If you would imagine a legal rule which would state, and I quote, stem cell research is prohibited if it's unethical. Would you say it's such an opaque norm?
It can turn opaque when you use an expert advice to determine the content of unethical. If you do that, so you think there are some conditions to be met, for instance, you have to be to think of the possibility of moral expertise. There is such a kind of thing. It's not so. It's a very disputed question. So in philosophy, is it possible to have to have moral expertise, I'm not sure of that, actually. But take it for granted. So we have moral expertise. I can go to an office here in the building in front of here and to get correct moral answer by a panel. Okay, take it for granted. And then you use such a content, which is a technical content, really. They are professional.
Okay.
So, and this is a content that you cannot get, actually, because if you could it, you wouldn't have gone to the guys to have to put a question. Okay? And you use such a content that is not really clear to you. It's not discernible. You cannot distinguish the different things that they do. So, and then you use such a content to get a decision. You are facing axiological opacity.
Mm-hmm. And would you argue the same way if the rule would stay stem cell research is prohibited if it's immoral? So in German, in the first case, unethisch, and the second case, unmoralisch, because we could say there's something like moral intuition, and so the content is not unknown.
Yeah, that's the problem. Mm-hmm. The problem is that when we deal with moral terms, we face a second-order opacity. So there is a dispute not only about the content of moral terms, but also about the theory that you have to use in order to get the content. Okay, and that means that one could say, okay, there is no moral content at all. Moral terms are without content. They refer to impulsive, so to the moral attitude in the subject using the term. Okay, that means that there is no real sense of the term. That means that moral reasoning cannot be. If I take such a position, obviously there is no answer to your question. And this is why I use the term undecidability, which is a term which is used in logic. But here in a very specific sense, so you cannot get a decision. You simply you cannot decide, so you cannot distinguish things. You gone. That's all. So there is not there is the more complicated problem, because moral contents are very contested contents.
I think we don't have to overcome the opacity, and I would say that we cannot translate the two domains, and I think it's a normal situation in law when we try to get something of the reality in the norm, because I think we have opacity of law in everyday legal texts, and for example, the examples you give in your talk, is there a difference to the example if the norm if there is a red light, you are not allowed to cross the street, and then the judge is in his expert room and didn't know if there was a red light or not, so the policeman came, he's the expert because he was in the situation when Mr. X crossed the street, and he says, yeah, there was a red light.
Yeah.
And then the judge decided, and and first we think but he knows what the red light is. Like, he didn't know what X, Y, Z is in slack. So there could be a difference. But if we change the example and the judge is blind or colorblind or something, then he doesn't know what red is. Or we say the judge knows what red is, but only in the definition, like it's a color or something. He doesn't know the physical Wellenlänge of red or something. So like the chemical formula XYZ, he doesn't know what red is, and so we have opaque opacity in everyday norm.
Yeah, my claim is that you can draw a line between opacity on the one side and the situation of the red line. Okay, it's not the same. Mm-hmm. According to my thesis, because you propose it, it's not a case of opacity. Why is it is not? I would say that the judges do not use the expert advice. Okay. But first thing, is this actually an expert advice? It depends on the concept of expert you are applying by claiming that. I don't think that the policeman is an expert. Okay. Expertise belongs to mastery of language, which is very specified. This has to do with a particular vocabulary, build up a vocabulary, mm-hmm. and then expertise is made also by a mastery of such a vocabulary. Okay. And obviously, it's very it's not easy to pick up what is a mastery, what is not, throughout borderline cases. But a mastery is technical mastery is quite different from the behavior of or the testimony of the policeman, because it's very very clear that there is a difference from the advice of a chemical. Okay, how do you say chemist? Well, a guy working on chemistry, and on the other side, the policeman, who look at things such as you do. Okay, so the mastery is something more complicated than that. On the basis that you need a vocabulary and you need a mastery that normal people do not have. Okay, and on the basis of these peculiar things, okay, mastery and vocabulary, opacity arises. Because if we were doing things with natural language, vocabulary, our expertise in using such language, opacity makes no sense. Okay. So this is the point. So there is a difference between the red line situation and the slug situation. The difference depends on the notion of expertise. Expertise is made of a vocabulary and a mastery. And it is a vocabulary and a mastery that the judge does not grasp, because it is not able to use. And this is why the guy calls upon the expert. My opinion is that the term testimony is very strange here. Very strange here. In a way, they expert people who has mastery in vocabulary, particular mastery in vocabulary, specialized mastery in vocabulary, help. So, are very important outcome determinative as to the process of fact finding. But on the other side, this is why I use such a framework. They determine the content of the specialist theorems. This is my thesis.
Okay. Maybe I didn't get your point, but I want to ask whether it's really necessary for your concept to frame the problem of opacity as a problem of interpretation. So I go back to the standard view and would rather argue that it is a problem of evaluation of facts. And as the differences you presented between the long process of interpretation and the process of opacity seem to me rather stark. Mm-hmm. And I would go totally along with your conclusion that the problem of opacity, fact of evaluation, has consequences for interpretation. I cannot interpret the norm when I don't know what facts are. And so I would like to ask you, why is it necessary for you for your conclusions to frame this problem as a problem of interpretation? And then I would ask a second question. Doesn't this problem an institutional dimension, as we would say, interpretation is the domain of the courts. And so an interference with the process of interpretation via the introduction of opaque norms interferes with the very, very purpose of what courts are designed for. So we see opacity as a danger for the law. But the examples you gave us show that there might be a legitimate reasons for a legislator to introduce opaque norms.
Yeah.
And in my view, if we consider the institutional dimension, when we consider the problem of opacity as a problem of facts, we have a totally different set of things as the facts are the administration and the legislator's domain. And we don't see opacity necessarily as an intrusion into the interpretive process, but rather as a, as you say, as a question of balance of powers.
So the first point, interpretation facts, evaluation of facts. My thesis would be, is supposed to be a thesis about semantics. It's a thesis about the content of legal terms. The situation, in those situations in which such a content is, give us problems for people using the law to get decision or doing whatever you like. Okay. So it seems to me that we can also in this case draw a line between from a conceptual point of view from between facts, evaluation of facts and the content of legal terms. But at the same time the problem of opacity is a way of connecting these different aspects. Why is it so? My claim is that you cannot find facts, okay, without evaluating facts. Okay. And you cannot evaluate in facts if you have not a content according to which facts can be legally qualified. You cannot do that. The question is that opacity block these relationships between facts on the one hand and legal contents on the other hand. You cannot do that. So if you look at the connection between facts and norms from a dynamical point of view, opacity blocks such a process and blocks such a process on the side of the content. Okay. Why? Because the expertise is used also for determining the conditional application of terms. That's the point. It seems to me that this is the case. If this is not the case, you are right, and this is wrong. If this is not the case, actually expertise are necessary. So the expertise here used by the court is necessary in order to have a content, simply have a content. Then it seems to me that this is correct. This man.
I want to come back to your examples. The first example, I think, is not so convincing, the example about harm, because you would think that everybody has a concept of harm and has even a legal concept of harm. And what the expert is asked is, did this harm happen? That's like the red light situation. We don't know about the facts, but we know what harm is. And we could easily come up with a concept of harm, which maybe lawyers even have more to say about the concept of harm than the expert has, because we have the whole history of penal law, we have the whole history of tort law, and there's a lot of thought about harm, the harm principle in penal law. So lawyers probably know much more about harm than a lot of other experts. So I think this example is rather weak if you want to make the point that it's about the semantics, the capacity of the semantics. Your second example kind of is decided against your case because the court said, "Well, you made a mistake. you should have developed and judicial understanding of this disease on your own. You couldn't just leave it opaque." I think you would get a stronger case if you would come up with a semantic thesis that would say that in order to be in a position to develop a semantic understanding of a concept, you need more than a lexical definition of it. You need to be an expert yourself. You need to be not only familiar with the concept of this disease, but with all the other diseases too. You need to understand the concepts of this disease. So if your whole program would be backed by a semantic thesis that would be rather challenging for the mastery of concepts, because the opacity you are claiming would be in a way semantically necessary opacity, because it's impossible for the judge just to grasp one medical concept. And you cannot do this. You cannot understand the concept as such. So you would have to become an expert to develop the content for this concept in this more challenging semantic theory for grasping a concept. And then you could make the case that in some areas the transformation of technical language into the law is in a way impossible, because you have like necessary capacity for non-experts. And my question would be, is that your point?
Yeah, it's this. Actually, I in the paper, I do not deal with the problem of conceptual content. I don't use the term concepts, because from a philosophical point of view, this is really a big point. So it's not easy to deal with that. But the idea of mastery is meant by myself to be connected to your observations, because mastery means that when you master a concept, you need a net of inferential connection in using terms. So from inferential point of view, content is a set of inferences which drive your linguistic behavior. So the idea of mastery is actually exactly that. So you cannot have the meaning of a term by only this. By in order to grasp a term, you have to grasp a language. So Bob Brandon would say that. So language is the set of the inferential moves that you are used to do, you know, when you use language to communicate, think to other people. So that's the problem. But this is that the idea would be that is a semantic thesis. It depends on the idea of mastery of language is connected to such an idea, and if you can really interpret if this is necessary, it's not. So my point is not that interpretation shall be done in a way, but my thesis is that this is important to claim that interpretation could be done when this is the case. There is some situation in which the law must be interpreted, because it is undetermined. Okay, but I agree with you. It's a problem of mastery of a language. If the judge does not master the technical language, terms are opaque to him. This is true, I think so.
I'm wondering if it wouldn't quite radically change the problem if we added the perspective of the legislator to the picture. because
yeah, this is really important.
Yeah, it's building on Thomas' second question, because well, the question I'm asking myself is: does the judge really need to understand every single term of a legal provision in order for it to work? So it's quite a functionalistic approach, I would say.
Yeah.
Because one could argue, I think, that the legislator has envisaged this whole process of, well, we've got our legal experts, the legal system, the judges, and then we've got our chemical experts, our physics experts, whoever. And once we use specific chemical, physical language in our legal provisions, we envisage the whole process of judges drawing on experts' opinions to reach their conclusions. So what the legislator does is not describe reality as some kind of given thing, but describes a process of learning about the process of intelligibility, like this. So if we add this to the picture, one could say, well, we don't really have a problem because the legislator wants it to work this way. He wants the judge to be an expert in applying the legal provisions. So it doesn't have to be, the provision could also be, if this is harmful, then it should be prohibited. If not, and then we've got a lot of things to interpret for the judge, except for the term harmful. So I don't.
So from a sociological point of view, I agree with you. So sometimes it is the case that the legislator uses technical terms to drive the activity of the judge, because he thinks that the judge should not take a decision which is not in, which is against some element of reality, which has to be taken into account in such cases. This is the situation that I envision. So it is so. What I like to do is to show what are the consequences of this. Okay, we can do that. Yes, we can think that we have to do that. There is no other way to do things the right way, but there is some drawbacks. And I think that is a good thing to be aware of them. And these drawbacks are these. So you cannot do several things, you as interpreter, think to be an interpreter. So you cannot do all this. So on the one hand, if you use such a strategy, legislator uses such things, so technical terms, direct reference to technical expertise, we have some advantages in some law domains, okay? But we have also drawbacks, and these are the drawbacks. And we have to balance the advantages that we have with the drawbacks and being aware from a theoretical point of view of both. This is the aim of my research here. But it's true. Sometimes it's, from a normative point of view, it's a good thing that a norm is opaque. But be careful, because by opaque norms you have to face such problems. That's the point.
Yeah.